This is the primary purpose of voicing ourselves. Whatever comes out becomes a lifeline, a vein of expression by which we affirm again and again that we are vital, a quickening part of all the majesty and variety of life. But soon, perhaps in school or at home, or when first venturing after a sense of love we somehow think is not quite within us, too soon, we start believing that we cry and sound in order to be heard. And then everything changes. Then we become anxious to be received, to be accepted and approved. But imagine if birds only sang when heard, if musicians only played when approved of, if poets only spoke when understood. There have been many times I've struggled through the expectation and disapproval of others, all to refine my voice and rejoice as a living piece of things. Certainly there's a particular joy and nourishment in being heard, but I have come to realize that sounding my way into the world to express who I am must always come first. Since wanting to be thought well of never goes away, I always have to keep the reactions of others at bay long enough for my voice to make it to the light. I must tell you of an old man I know who came here from Italy. He spent his life working as a plumber. He's a good, sweet man, and when he laughs, which is often, he cries no matter who's around or whether or not anyone understands. He keeps his pipes clean. He lives out loud. Unknowingly, he's shown me how to love the world. For your meditation, go outside if you can and listen to the birds. Hear the clearness of their song. Note how there seems to be nothing between their impulse to sing and what they sing. As you breathe, note what you're feeling and note whatever hesitation keeps you from sounding it out loud. This is a human malady. Work on removing your human hesitation. As you inhale, feel what rises in you. At the top of your breath, blink the mind shut like an eye. As you exhale, let the feeling sound from you, no matter how softly. August 13th. Bird Rock. Maybe that's why I want to touch people so often. It's only another way of talking. Georgia O'Keeffe. I was aching and vulnerable, feeling far from home, when through the harsh shore wind I saw a large rock surrounded by the rough, churned-up sea. The rock was covered with all kinds of animals: willet, gull, cormorant, sea lion, seal, pelican, otter. All had found refuge from the hammering of the sea, climbing, winging, hauling themselves on the rock, living together, laying on each other, finding this rock oasis of wind and sun, all too tired once on the rock to fight, each having been wrung out by the pounding of the wet, wet hours. I realize this is how the wounded find their way, how we have found each other, even now. Every survivor, regardless of what they survive, knows the hammering of the sea, and the rock we find refuge on is an exposed place where we finally accept each other. Too tired from swimming to think any longer about territories, too tired to talk except through simple touch. The wellness group I attended weekly was such a rock. The meeting rooms of recovery are such a rock. The thousand quiet rooms of therapy are such a rock. For those who have suffered, tolerance is not a political position or even a principle. For those of us who have suffered, who have hauled ourselves into the sun, anything exhausted beside us is family. For your meditation, center yourself and imagine this moment as a rock you've climbed on out of your suffering. Breathe deeply and feel the momentary peace from the hammering of your days. Open your heart to see if others you know spend time here. If someone in particular comes to mind, be open to talking with them about all this.
August 14th. The Puye Cliffs.
I thought I could become wise, but it is much beyond me. Far away is all that has come into being, and very, very deep. Who can find it?
Ecclesiastes.
Humility, which comes from the word humus, the soil, offers more than a bowed head. It gives us a connection with everything older than we are, and so provides us with a calming perspective outside of our daily worries, and often beyond our understanding. I felt this deeply one day when visiting a friend in New Mexico. We drove an hour north of Santa Fe, where we found the Puye Cliffs, dwellings cut in stone where 1,500 Pueblo lived for 12 generations. We climbed to the top, and winded by what seemed the edge of the world, Carol looked out and said, "How beautifully insignificant we are." We imagined the elders choosing this site 800 years ago because the vastness would keep everyone aware of the Creator. The wind grew stronger, whipping in the little holes where native spirits lived, and they began to sing beneath the wind, and I thought of Carl Jung confessing that only in terms of the centuries did his life have meaning. And I realized that everyone who ever sought the truth of spirit has lived like this, looking out from their dark, hollowed cave onto the majesty of all there is. How we all climb through the trials of our outer life to the precipice of humility and indwell there on the edge of mystery. How we climb through our suffering to a place where we can carve out a tiny home from which to dizzy ourselves with the knowledge that we are small and the universe is big. Oh, I have suffered the climb, like climbers before me, to live high on the wall and wait. There we stood together and alone, worn by the days to exactly what we are. There on the inner cliffs where humbled creatures meet to see what can't be seen and know what can't be known, we spread our arms like hawks to taste the ancient air. We spread our minds like trees rooted on the edge to accept the end of knowledge arriving like sun, not to instruct us, but to warm us and help us grow. Oh, we leaned into the vastness and spread our hearts in our simple chests, pounding beneath the wind like a human thing 3 inches from its song. For your meditation, the next chance you get, travel to an open natural space, a mountaintop, an ocean shore, maybe the bank of a wide lake or the center of an open field. Meditate there in silence, letting the wind surround your tiny breath with the feel of everything older than you.
August 15th. Being held.
Perhaps the shortest and most powerful prayer in human language is help.
Father Thomas Keating.
A hardness we can't see, cold and rigid, begins to form between us and the world the longer we stay silent about what we need. It's not even about getting what we need, but about admitting, mostly to ourselves, that we do have needs. Asking for help, whether we get it or not, breaks this hardness that builds in the world. Paradoxically, asking even for the things that no one can give, we are relieved and blessed for the asking. For admitting our humanness lets the soul break surface the way a dolphin leaps for the sun. One of the most painful barriers we can experience is the sense of isolation the modern world fosters, which can only be broken by our willingness to be held, by the quiet courage to allow our vulnerabilities to be seen. For as water fills a hole and as light fills the dark, kindness wraps around what is soft if what is soft can be seen. So admitting what we need, asking for help, letting our softness show, these are prayers without words that friends, strangers, wind, time can all wrap themselves around. Allowing ourselves to be held is like returning to the womb. For your meditation, as you breathe, try to relax and soften your guard for these brief moments. Breathe slowly and feel your pores open more fully to the world. Inhale deeply and let the air and silence get closer. Inhale cleanly and allow yourself to be held by what is. August 16th. Dump your pockets. Please remember, it's what you are that heals, not what you know. Carl Jung. This is very difficult to remember. I struggle with it daily. Even when I understand this enough to open my heart like a sponge to the day, someone I love comes along in pain and I start dumping my pockets, looking for the one thing I know that will help them. But time and time again, the only thing they want is for me to open my heart like a sponge to them. They only want to be heard and held. This is so easy to see in other forms of nature. Stars hold the dark by being light. Rivers keep the earth alive by being wet. Wind clears our heads of clouds. These are the teachers that open the heart, the things that wait in our nature for us to bring them alive. These are the things that heal ourselves and each other. When my pockets are empty and I've dumped all I know, I often end up shrugging, admitting my ignorance of what to do. Humbly, it's then that the real work of love begins. For your meditation, once during the day, think of who you are as a living energy and not as a goal to be achieved or an obstacle to overcome. Feel yourself without inventory. August 17th. Each is a living flute. Suffering makes an instrument of each of us, so that standing naked, holes and all, the unseen vitalities can be heard through our simplified lives. Sometimes we can't get what we want. While this can be disappointing and painful, it's only devastating if we stop there. The world thrives on endless possibilities. It's what makes nature a reservoir of health. Yet if the heart is cramped or the mind locks on to its pain, we can narrow wonder to a thread. In contradiction to the endless number of eggs that spawn a fish, and the endless number of cells that blossom to heal a wound, we can hold out the one thing we want as the only food. From here, crisis and desperation are just a short step. It becomes a sorry occupation, beating oneself up for the one seed that didn't take. It's an insidious way. The more we refuse mystery, the more we feel responsible for all that befalls us. Indeed, the more we distract ourselves with analyzing strategies that failed, the more we avoid the true feelings of loss that no one can escape en route to a full and vital life. Even if we can accept this, none of us is exempt from the turmoil and pain that arises when what we want is love. For once we pour ourselves into loving another person, it seems as if they take who we are with them when they go. In truth, they take a deep part of us, but what feeds the heart from within is endless, and everything that is living heals. Nowhere is this more evident than in the beauty of trees. Their endless turns of bark and nubs of trunk make each look like a sage. Yet amazingly, the skin of an old tree is no more than a living map of its scars. Can it be that the cuts turn scars and the scars turn into beautiful quiet notches in which things that fly can nest? In every space opened when what we want gets away, a deeper place is cleared in which the mysteries can sing. If we can only survive that pain of being emptied, we might yet know the joy of being sung through. Strangely and beautifully, each soul is a living flute being carved by life on earth to sound deeper and deeper song. For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on a relationship in which you feel you have lost a part of yourself. It might be a romantic relationship, a friendship, or a family tie. Breathe steadily and contemplate how this happened, by rejection, or submission, or by giving away your ability to choose what your soul needed. Or did your loved one move away or die? Breathe deeply, beneath all right and wrong, and along the hurt, underneath the loss, see if you can feel what has been opened and exposed for this tearing away. Even if you can't name it, take this new presence with you and spend the day getting to know the deeper song waiting to be played through you. August 18th. Settling into the hand of time. Be serene in the oneness of things, and erroneous views will disappear by themselves. Seng Tsan. I was sitting in Bryant Park in New York City. It was summer, and the tall oaks were all leaning south for some reason. It was midday and everyone was slouching in the heat. There were professional lunchers, German tourists, old men dozing, and the homeless muttering to themselves as the sparrows were flitting, their chirp some message no one could decode. The scene has stayed with me. It's made me realize that at times life seems an enormous waiting room with no destination, in which some walk stiffly to and fro, waiting for their pain to stop. Others wait for something good to happen. Still others fear that something bad will begin. And the driven plan while they wait. And I am each of them. It's such a struggle, has always been, for each of us to settle deep enough into the hand of time, which could take years, till we discover that there's nowhere to go. Perhaps the greatest challenge once fully awake is to drop all reaching and simply open like a clam, waiting in the deep until life in all its guises floods through the half-closed center that is us. Then God enters us like a brilliant stone falling in a lake, and the past ripples behind us, and the future ripples before us, and we are breathing in eternity. This meditation may take some time. Sit quietly and try to meditate until your sense of time starts to fall away. As you breathe, allow your images of the past and your hopes for the future to rise and pass. As you slow beyond waiting, allow the past and the future and your sense of time to merge. As you enter your day, try not to reach for life. Try not to leave or arrive. Try to let life enter you. August 19th. The Necessary Privilege. Not to feel is to stop the heart from breathing. So often we war against sadness as if it were an unwanted germ, and pine after happiness as if it were some promised Eden whose gate is keyed to the one secret flaw we need to rectify in order to be worthy. Even our Constitution attempts to rescue us from the hard, full journey of individuation, ensuring what no government can ensure, the soul's contentment, suggesting that happiness is our inalienable right, while implying that to experience sadness leaves us somehow deprived. Yet it's no mistake that to suffer means to feel keenly. For to feel deeply and precisely with full awareness is what opens us to both joy and sorrow. It's the capacity to feel keenly that reveals the meaning in our experiences. If you're thirsty, you can't dip your face to the stream and say, "I'll only drink the hydrogen and not the oxygen." If you remove one from the other, the water is no longer water and is no longer quenching. The life of feeling is no different. We cannot drink only of happiness or sorrow and have life remain life. The truth is that as the lungs make use of the air we breathe, the heart makes use of the things we experience. So to be alive is to feel. This is our right. To feel keenly is our necessary privilege. For your meditation, recall your most recent moment of happiness and what opened you to it. Recall your most recent moment of sadness and what opened you to that. Let each quiet breath bring these feelings together the way rivers merge into a sea. Without trying to keep them separate, feel your happiness and sorrow merge in the depth of your being. August 20th. Holding in the belly. The inward battle against our mind, our wounds, and the residues of the past is more terrible than outward battle. Swami Shivananda. I saw a sea otter rolling in the bay. It held a crab or small turtle against its belly, and on its back it would eat a piece, then press the crab or turtle to its belly, and turn over and swim some more. This stayed with me for days till I realized that I have been living like this otter, holding the uneaten part of my shell to my belly as I roll through the deep. And of course, it's impossible to swim freely while holding dead-shelled things so tightly. Indeed, trying to move on and eat the past at the same time is the cause of many ulcers. Realizing this made me stop and face the sadness of old wounds that I was holding tightly in my belly. It made me understand yet again that while we try to integrate inner and outer experience, while we aspire to such a oneness, the work is often one at a time, facing ourselves without going anywhere, not nibbling at the ailing soul on the run. For your meditation, still yourself and see if there's a strain between your doing and your being, a strain from tending something in your life while on the move. If so, stop and face what is in your belly. Make what you need to tend where you are going. Breathe deeply and let your inner and outer attention go in the same direction. August 21st. Teachers are everywhere. Teachers arise from somewhere within me that is beyond me. The way the dark soil that is not the root holds the root and feeds the flower. So often we think of ourselves as freestanding and in charge because we have the simple blessing of being able to go where we want. But we are as rooted as shrubs and trees and flowers in an unseeable soil that is everywhere. It's just that our roots move. Certainly we make our own decisions dozens every day, but we're nourished in those decisions by the very ground we walk, by the quiet teachers we encounter everywhere. Yet in our pride and confusion, in our self-centeredness and fear, we often miss the teachers and feel burdened and alone. In trying to hear those quiet teachers, I'm reminded of the great poet Stanley Kunitz, who as a young man struggling darkly with how to proceed with his life, heard geese cross a night sky and somehow he knew what he had to do. Or a man I know who was slowly extinguishing himself, sorely depressed, when finally, exhausted of his endless considerations, he heard small birds in snow in unexpected song. He realized he was a musician who needed to find and learn the instrument he was supposed to play. From the logic of being freestanding and in charge, experiences of this sort seem crazy-making and untrustworthy. But the soil of life in which we grow speaks a different language than we are taught in school. In actuality, truth and love and the spirit of eternity are rarely foreseeable, and clarity of being seldom comes through words. In my brief time on earth, I have felt the light of ageless spirit fill me unexpectedly when I thought I would die, and as water pumps its way up a slim root, making that plant leaf out toward the light, I have found myself against all fear and will, flushed with possibility in the direction of dreams I hardly imagined. Whether through birds in snow or geese honking in the dark, or through the brilliant wet leaf that hits your face the moment you are questioning your worth, the quiet teachers are everywhere. When we think we're in charge, their lessons dissolve as accidents or coincidence. But when brave enough to listen, the glass that breaks across the room is offering us direction that can only be heard in the roots of how we feel and think. For your meditation, breathe evenly and accept that there is no way to prepare for unexpected teachings other than to keep your heart and mind quiet and receptive. Breathe deeply and slowly, knowing that as the body must be stretched to do exercise, the heart and mind must be stretched to stay open to the spirit of life. Breathe fully and steadily, stretching the passageways of your heart and mind, accepting that you are a flower yet to open. August 22nd. Beneath arriving. I'm only lost if I'm going somewhere in particular. Megan Scribner. A friend was traveling around Europe, training from city to city. Despite her plans, her interest drew her in different directions, and a path unfolded that she couldn't have foreseen. Each point of discovery led her to the next, as if some logic out of view were guiding her. During this phase of her journey, though she often wasn't sure where she was, she never felt lost. It was when she needed to arrive at a certain station at a certain time that she felt she was off course, astray, and at the fringe of where she was supposed to be. All this led her to realize that the more narrow her intentions on any one day, the more she felt behind, late, and lost. In contrast, the wider her net of designs, the more often she felt a sense of discovery. Regardless of where she had to be, it seemed that the more open to possibility and change she was, the more she felt like every moment she came upon was holding a treasure she was supposed to find. Of course, there will always be times that we need to find our very precise way, but more often than not, our image of a destination is only a starting point that we cling to needlessly. When we can free up our sense of needing to arrive in a certain place, we lessen the weight of being lost. And once beneath arriving and beneath our fear of failing to arrive, the real journey begins. This is a walking meditation. Choose somewhere nearby you'd like to walk to, a bench in a park, a coffee shop downtown, or a schoolyard not too far away. Choose a simple route and begin your walk. As your walk unfolds, be open to what catches your interest, a bird song, a ripple of light, or maybe the sound of children playing. Follow that interest. Practice letting go of your plan and discovering the path of interest that waits beneath your plan.
August 23rd. The Taste of Sky. Of magic doors there is this. You do not see them even as you are passing through. Anonymous. Often as we're being transformed, we can't tell what is happening. For while in the midst of staying afloat, it's next to impossible to see the ocean we're being carried into. While struggling with the pain of change, it's often impossible to see the new self we're becoming. While feeling our hand pried loose by experience, we can seldom imagine what will fill it once it is opened. As the days rinse our heart, we can feel something unseeable scour us through, though we can't yet imagine how much fresher milk and sky and laughter will taste once we are returned to the feel of being new. For your meditation, sit quietly and bring to mind a struggle you're now experiencing in your life. Breathe through this struggle and bless the buried part of you just waiting for its turn in the world.
August 24th. Enthusiasm. We are human beings. Our being infinite is wind, our human house full of holes. As difficult as it is to accept that there are no answers in life, it's even more difficult at times to accept that no one holds what we presume are the answers. No one. There is only, it seems, the returning glimpse of wholeness in which all is seen and felt, and then the frequently muddled aftermath when clarity is gone and all speech fails. In essence, as we must blink 1,000 times a day, what is human in us blinks continually over our essence. In this way, our limitations humble us, covering our gifts repeatedly, blinking away there, then not, there, then not. There is no escaping the mix of all this. There is only holding the mystery of truth in view, even when we're in the dark, the way we can feel the warmth of the sun when our lids are closed. So what are we left with? Well, we're each faced with the endless and repeatable task of discovering or uncovering our enthusiasm, which means in essence being at one with the energy of God or the divine. The word itself comes from the Greek en, one with, and theos, the divine. Despite our endless limitations, it seems that the qualities of attention, risk, and compassion allow us to be at one with the energy of the whole, and the result is enthusiasm, that deep sensation of oneness. As such, enthusiasm is not a mood that can be willed or forced. Rather, it's the ripple that follows the stone. It can only be felt after we immerse ourselves in life. Like a bird gliding on the current of air it will never see, or a fish swimming with the tide of the deep it will never see, or a note being sung as part of a song it will never see, we are all left with the necessary risk to starve the ego, that in us which believes it can control the world, so that the unseeable music of being may rise and carry us. In recurring humility, our enthusiasm, our momentary oneness with the energy of the universe, is the sound of God moving through the harp of our soul. It's a mysterious and strenuous and simple practice, to walk when we are able and to be still when we are not, to bleed the dark that builds within us and to trade it for the light which is always waiting. Despite our limitations, the most crucial challenge of being human is to show up like a rose. For your meditation, take a moment during your day
and sit quietly outside with your eyes open. As you breathe, be aware of the times you must blink. Be comforted by the fact that even when you blink, the sun does not stop shining, the birds do not stop singing, and the flowers do not stop opening. As you breathe and blink, be comforted by the fact that even when you can't see, your spirit does not stop shining, your heart does not stop singing, and your life does not stop opening. August 25th. Love is in the being. The center I once glimpsed is all around me, a landscape I now live in, and I will not pretend anymore. If those I love can't recognize me with my soul out in the open, I will no longer retreat and show what is familiar. You do not have to do anything to be loved. You do not have to perform or achieve or earn a merit badge or be witnessed doing good. It's taken me half a century to learn and believe this. It's my work to this day. For our messages to the contrary are very deep. Growing up, I heard my father say 1,000 times, "Don't tell me how hard you try, just show me what you accomplish." But my life has shown me that the opposite is true. In my heart, where the spirit of the world really comes alive, it doesn't matter what I accomplish. The only thing that matters is how deeply I try. Out of this trying comes sincerity and love. This has led me to another realization of heart. Being who we are does not let others down. For much of my adult life, I've heard the message, "You must consider others," offered as a caution against following your heart because it might upset others. Certainly true compassion begins with the consideration of others. But the displeasure of others is no reason to muffle your love. You don't have to do anything to be loved, and being who you are does not let others down. This needs to be repeated and often. Simply be who you are and love what is before you. For your meditation, center yourself and with each breath put aside your accomplishments. Breathe deeply, and with each breath, put aside the things you haven't accomplished. Sit in the center of your being without these uniforms of goodness, and know that you are as beautiful as a mountain or a river. August 26th. The Rabbit and the Garden. The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. Marcel Proust. In the movie Phenomenon, John Travolta's character has done everything he can think of to keep this pesky rabbit out of his garden. He's even put in fencing that goes 3 feet underground, and still everything he plants is nibbled through. Suddenly one night he wakes and realizes he's been going about this all wrong. In the moonlight he quietly goes to his garden and opens the gate, then sits on his porch and waits. To his surprise, as he begins to fall asleep, the rabbit scurries out the gate. While he'd been trying to keep it out, the rabbit was trapped in his garden and he was inadvertently keeping it in. How often do we barricade and fence up our lives against hurt and loss, thinking we're keeping the painful things out, when they're already trapped inside, eating at our roots, and what we really need is to open the gate and let them out. For your meditation, center yourself and consider what you're currently trying to keep out of your heart. It might be a fear of what's to be or a memory of what has been, or the truth of a situation you're living right now. Close your eyes and open the gate to your heart and wait. Just breathe and wait. Breathe slowly and give the rabbit a chance to leave your garden. August 27th. Keep the colors wet. I can't tell if the day is ending or the world, or if the secret of secrets is inside me again. Anna Akhmatova. The longer I live, the harder it is to discern between the stronger emotions. They all spill into each other where they begin. The longer I go, though, the more I can tell between not feeling and feeling, for this is all that seems to matter. Not feeling puts me on the sideline, makes the world black and white and me a dry shade of gray. Only feeling keeps me in the scene, keeps the colors wet. The other day was very wet. I went for groceries and the old man packing bags was staring off. I knew by his heavy silver eyes that he was a widower, and just as he lifted my no-fat cottage cheese, he was seeing her, floating somewhere before him, and the soda and the swordfish and the English muffins were piling up as the black belt kept moving, and I gently took the cottage cheese from his hand, and he returned, looking at me a bit dizzy to still be here. I've worked so long and hard to be able to feel my way into the lives of others, only to realize we are all this way. And it's not just sad, it's more than sad. It's the ground of heart where we all meet. Sometimes the skin of mind is torn and we are no longer separate beings. When the talking's done, we become still proofs of love. I left the store that day feeling more than one heart should, and couldn't tell if I was in trouble or on holy ground. For your meditation, sit quietly and breathe your way beneath the names we give to our emotions. Breathe slowly and try to feel the stirrings that rise within you without calling them happy or sad. Breathe evenly and try to feel the place of spirit where they all begin. August 28th. In the Ocean of Spirit. Though the wind enlivens the tree is not the wind. And though life enlivens us, we are not the source. Everywhere we're given examples of how the life-giving elements move through us and bring us to life. Consider how fish make up the sea, in fact depend on the sea, and yet the sea, though found in each fish, cannot be contained by any one fish. Consider how the tree has no control over the movement of the wind any more than the fish has control of the movement of the sea. Humbly, this gives us a way to understand the vast life of spirit. For like the tree and the fish, we as human beings have no control over the movement of grace. Souls like fish make up the ocean of all spirit, depending on that element. And yet the ocean of grace, though found in each soul, cannot be contained in any one soul. If we understand this, it affects the way we live. For no matter your spiritual lens or the names you prefer for the mystery, human beings make up the world of God, depend on the world of God, and yet the world of God, though found in each being, cannot be contained in any one life. When we refuse this truth, we begin to self-destruct, because in our pride and will, we try to contain and control more than any one human being can. Only when we recognize the elemental relationship of soul to spirit, of the individual life to the stream of life, only then do we paradoxically have the blessing and energy of all life. If I'm honest in looking at all my attempts to love and be loved, I must admit that this also holds true in matters of the heart. For aren't all our passions and yearnings little fish that make up a greater sea of love? Don't we depend on the love that surrounds us to bring us alive within? And yet the ocean of love, though found in each heart, cannot be contained in any one heart. In truth, the essence of love, as Jesus affirms, is greater than all the hearts that claim to have it. But how does knowing all this help us live? Well, for myself, I can only offer that I often feel like a tree standing up to wind. And just as we can only hear a great wind for the trees that stand against it, we can only know God by leaning our soul into the wind of our experience. For your meditation, watch the wind move through a familiar tree. Watch until the wind has left, and notice how even when still, the branches sway slightly. Notice how even what seems like still air is just a subtle wind. Meditate on how similar the life of spirit is as it moves through us. Feel the force of life like a subtle wind move through you as you breathe. August 29th. Live your worries through. Live, I say, live your worries through, and your spirit will wake from its fever, and you will want others like soup. During my struggle with cancer, the endless medical gauntlet of going through procedures and tests and then waiting for the results gave me a lot of practice in dealing with worry. I quickly realized that fear gained its power whenever I would leave the moment at hand to imagine bad things descending in the future. Even when realizing this, I was hard-pressed to stop it, and soon I discovered that worry was the mental echo of fear, the replaying in detail of all the bad things that might or might not come into being. Finally, through exhaustion, I dropped my fear and worry just for a moment and found that I landed back in my life as it truly was, laced with difficulties and joys alike. I found that the moment I was living, no matter my circumstance, was the only safe place. From here I could truly reach for others whose love and care fed me. In large measure, it was the moment after fear and the reaching for others after worry that kept me well. For your meditation, take one thing that is worrying you and use your breathing to make a flag of yourself. With each exhalation, shake your hands open, letting the gust of worry move through you. Feel the moment your worry has left your hands, no matter how brief it seems. If you feel worried or fearful during your day, exhale slowly and open your hands. August 30th. Stepping out of fear. I will always have fears, but I need not to be my fears, for I have other places within myself from which to speak and act. Parker Palmer. No feeling takes over our lives more suddenly or more completely than fear. It seems to come up from nowhere, and in a blink or swallow can infect everything. The blind Frenchman Jacques Lusseron describes how fear was the only thing that truly prevented him from seeing. He says, "Still, there were times when the light faded, almost to the point of disappearing. It happened every time I was afraid. If instead of letting myself be carried along by confidence and throwing myself into things, if I hesitated, calculated, thought about the wall or the half-open door or the key in the lock, if I said to myself that all these things were hostile and about to strike or scratch, then, without exception, I hit or wounded myself. The only easy way to move around the house, the garden, or the beach was by not thinking about it at all, or thinking as little as possible. Then I moved between obstacles the way they say bats do. Otherwise, What the loss of my eyes had not accomplished was brought about by fear. It made me blind. More than anything, fear blinds, and only by stepping without hesitation into the next inch of the unknown can we build confidence in the life we are about to live. For your meditation, sit with three small items before you. Close your eyes and center yourself. Practice moving through the unknown by reaching without hesitation for each of the items before you. With each breath, pick one up and place it somewhere else nearby. Keep doing this until your reach feels as smooth as your breathing. August 31st. In your veins. Forget about enlightenment. Sit down wherever you are and listen to the wind singing in your veins. John Wellwood. When starting out, I wanted so badly to become a poet that I held it in view like some hill I needed to climb to see from. But getting to the top, something was missing, and so I had to climb the next hill. Finally, I realized I didn't need to climb to become a poet. I was a poet. The same thing happened with love. I wanted so badly to become a lover, but climbing through relationships like hills, I realized again that I was a lover all along. Then I wanted to become wise, but after much travel and study, it was during my bedridden days with cancer that I realized I was already wise. I just didn't know the language of my wisdom. Now I understand that all these incarnations come alive in us when we dare to live the days before us, when we dare to listen to the wind singing in our veins. We carry the love and wisdom like seeds, and the days sprout us. For your meditation, sit down wherever you are and simply breathe. With each breath, put down the names of what you aspire to. Breathe steadily and put down the names of relationship to lover, father, mother, daughter, son. Sit where you are without any names covering you and listen to the wind in your veins. September 1st. Kikaku and Basho. We shouldn't abuse God's creatures. You must reverse the haiku. Not dragonfly, remove its wings, pepper tree. But pepper tree, add wings to it, dragonfly. The Japanese master Basho in response to Kikaku's poem. The destruction or healing of the world hinges on which way this thought unfolds. Whether we pull things apart or put things together makes all the difference. Indeed, Basho's small instruction reveals to us how human history has unfolded, with one pilgrim taking things apart and another putting them back together, and on and on. As an example, let's look at two very different explorers who both shaped the world as we know it, Christopher Columbus and Carl Jung. While Columbus crossed the ocean with the intent of breaking things down and retrieving whatever treasures he could find, Jung crossed an interior ocean with the intent of putting together whatever he might find to make treasures of what he already had. We must ask what made one explorer set foot on a continent he'd never seen and proclaim, "This is mine," and what made the other bow and utter in humility, "I belong to this." Perhaps the difference is that Columbus was searching outwardly with a predetermined sense of conquest when he reached the New World, and Carl Jung was searching inwardly with an undetermined sense of love when he reached the unconscious. Both were clearly devoted to their search, But where Columbus was intent to separate and own, Jung, like Basho, was intent to unify and belong. We must be watchful, for we suffer both the impulse to separate and own and the impulse to unify and belong. As our eyes shut and open repeatedly, we as builders take things apart and put them together repeatedly. Yet as wakefulness depends on keeping the eyes open, healing depends on keeping things joined. In love, in friendship, in seeking to learn and grow, in trying to understand ourselves, how often do we, like Kikuku, remove the wings of the thing before it even has a chance to free us? For your meditation, sit quietly and meditate on a quest you're currently involved in. It might be a quest for self-understanding, for a deeper relationship, or for a home or better job. Look closely at how you're working at this quest. Are you taking things apart or putting them together? Are you trying to separate and own or to unify and belong? Are you removing wings or adding wings? September 2nd. Where love is deep. Where love is deep, much can be accomplished. Shinichi Suzuki. Despite our culture's overemphasis on doing, there's a rightful place and time to get things done. In truth, there's very little we cannot do. Much of the time we just lack either the ability to envision the dream built or the confidence that we can build it. I remember early on how my grandmother would encourage me to envision even the smallest dreams down through my hands into the world. She would say, "See it here," pointing to my forehead. Then she would take both my little hands and say, "Now see it here." Then she would laugh and say, "And soon it will be here." With this, she would look around the room. It's an amazing thing about being human that we can feel something inside and then build it in the world. It seems we have this inborn need to love and to create. At their deepest, these drives of spirit appear to be the same. For through her love, wasn't Grandma creating me? Don't we help birth another the instant we encourage them to see with their heart? Don't we help birth the world each time we give someone confidence to build what they see with their heart? Somehow we're meant to wrestle the earth, wood, clay, marble, into forms, to seize the air, notes, words, colors, into signs. Somehow we're meant to hold other breathing questions like ourselves and shudder as we part. I go on and on as if to declare that life is worth living. It makes me ask with joy, what shall we fall in love with tonight? To what color shall we devote our being? What instrument shall we be next? For your meditation, close your eyes and envision some becoming that you dream of. It might be the dream of a solid relationship, or the dream of a home, or the dream of building something lasting with your hands. Breathe deeply and envision the dream fully completed existing somewhere in the world. Breathe slowly and spend time with this vision. Enter it and circle it. Now open your eyes and look to your hands. Feel the completed dream move into your open hands. Feel your hands pulse with the energy of the dream waiting to be built. September 3rd. The Unwatched Space. I tried so hard to please that I never realized no one is watching. I imagined, like everyone else at school, that my parents were sitting just out of view, like those quiet doctors behind clean mirrors, watching and reprimanding my every move. As I reached adulthood, the habit continued. I walked around, constantly troubled by what others must be thinking of what I was or was not doing. In this, we're burdened with seeds of self-consciousness. From this, we trouble our spontaneity and the possibility of joy by watching ourselves way too closely, nervously unsure if this or that is a mistake. It's from the burden of others watching and judging that the need to achieve gets so exaggerated into the want for fame. I remember at different times fantasizing the future, gathering like an audience, ready to marvel at how much I had done with so little. It didn't even matter for what this attention might come. Just let some form of watchfulness be approving, and I would know relief. It wasn't till I woke bleeding after surgery, with all those moth-like angels breathing against me, that I realized the audience was gone. I cried way inside, not because I had just had a rib removed, and not because I was in the midst of battling cancer. I cried because I had not only been physically open, but also open beneath my sense of being watched. Somehow the unwatched space was now given air. Though I could explain it to no one, my sobs were sobs of relief, the water of a de-shelled spirit soaking ground. Years have passed, and I wait long hours in the sun to see the birch fall of its own weight into the lake, and it seems to punctuate God's mime. Nothing sad about it. Now the audience of watchers is gone, and I can feel life happen in its quiet, vibrant way without anything interfering. Now, sometimes at night, when the dog is asleep and the owl is beginning to stare into what no one ever sees, I stand on the deck and feel the honey of night spill off the stars. Feel it coat the earth and the trees, and the minds of children half asleep. I feel the stillness evaporate all notions of fame into the unwatched space that waits for light. In this undistorted silence, the presence of God is a kiss. It is here in this unwatched space that peace begins. For your meditation, sit quietly and breathe away the many eyes that seem to watch you. Center yourself and breathe away the opinions of your coworkers and friends. Focus on the unwatched space within and breathe away the judging eye of your parents or grandparents that you keep so alive in you. Inhale from the unwatched space and even breathe away your dreams of recognition and fame. Inhale from the unwatched space and feel the attention of life connect you to everything. September 4th. Growing Inside the Song. What lies behind us and what lies before us are tiny matters compared to what lies within us. Ralph Waldo Emerson. I saw a woman singing while pregnant and imagined how the rhythms of that song affected the life forming within her. Imagined the song drawing her unborn child's soul closer to its time in the world, the way light works on a root, strengthening it underground. I watched her sing and realized that the life within her was growing inside the song. I looked around the room, for we were in a circle of song, and everyone singing was bringing their soul closer to its time in the world. The nervous man was less nervous while singing, and the insecure woman next to me was relaxing her unworthiness as she sang, and I was able to drop my replaying of wounds while my mouth was open and my eyes were closed. It was then I realized that regardless of the words or the melody, this effort to sing is a way to open the passageways between